Welcome back to the Renaissance Times, episode 189. What you missed, ladies and gentlemen, off air before this was Ray going and screaming at his wife to shut the fuck up.
It was my
What
best
is
move.
Wrong with you? Oh, shut the fuck. I'm recording in here. It was just gold. Like, if I spoke to my wife that way, she would stab me.
See, normally
in the heart.
Normally that would be I'd have the same outcome, but she knows she's doing wrong because she's doing it in the room literally attached to mine, right on the other side of the wall, so I can hear everything because this is a cheap house from the late 70s. The point is, normally I'd be dead, but because she knows she's in the wrong, it stayed her hand. Now, later on tonight, she's going to think this through and go, fuck him, he can't talk to me, yeah. And then I'll die, yeah. But at least I could do one more show with you, Cam, and I'm very excited.
You know you already have You have a weak heart already, man.
Like, I can't take much. I can't take
And she
much.
Knows that. Yeah.
She'll go for the heart.
She's just going to. She'll just, like, dress up in a Halloween costume, pop out somewhere, go, boo. You'll drop dead of a heart attack, and she'll, like, no burns the costume, and that's it.
No bruising.
It's perfect crime.
Anyway, don't give her ideas. Where were we? Oh, we hadn't even started yet, so next episode.
We're talking, of course, about the House of Wisdom. Baghdad, 800s CE. Al-Mamun, the caliph of the caliphate in that part of the world at the time. And one of the scholars that he employed at the House of Wisdom was probably, I think, the most famous scholar from the Arabic Golden Age. We've mentioned him briefly before, but we're going to spend a bit more time on him. Muhammad ibn Musa al-Khwarizmi. Now, one of the most famous historians of science, George Sarton, considered the founder of the discipline of the history of science as an independent field of study, wrote a huge reference book, not as huge as he planned. He was going to be 9 volumes. He died after the third, called The Introduction to the History of Science. He basically divided up world history going back to the 6th century BCE into 50-year chapters, and each chapter was named after the most important scientist of that age.
Yeah, so
and
several
the chapter
in there.
Between the one between 800 and 850, it's referred to as the time of Al-Khwarizmi. That's a bigger deal he was.
He gets it all by himself. Yeah, and you have to keep in mind that roughly around this time, some of the most earliest Greek texts that had come to this area and that were gathered and brought to this area, they're on their second, third translations. And not only are they still being translated over and over again, but the translators are becoming familiar with the work. They're becoming familiar with the way these people wrote. They're becoming familiar with the topic itself. So even the translations are getting better. And now you have this one person who we're about to go into who's able to, on his own, establish the history of science, I don't know what you want to call it, the breakdown of science or the study of science. And again, they have their own Leonardos. They have their own polymaths. And before I read this book, I had never heard of this guy. I had never heard of the book, but their contributions to the world of science is impressive as hell, and they should be celebrated for that.
Speaking of George Sarton, he was inspired to do his work on the history of science by the life of Da Vinci. Like us, became obsessed with Da Vinci, and he thought, well, who came? Like, exactly the reason for this miniseries on the Islamic Golden Age. He was like, well, who came before Da Vinci? Where did Da Vinci get his knowledge from?
Yes.
And he traced it back to the 6th century BCE. And like in our last episode, we were talking about the great Assyrian library of Nineveh, King Ashurbanipal, and I think that's around about the time when George Sarton studied his books, his volume as well. Right. Sarton, in the preparation for the second volume, which was going to be talking about the Arabics, actually, like us, went and learned Arabic and traveled around the Middle East for his research, just like us.
Yeah,
like, road trip. Did fundamental science. Like we kind of use Google Translate to translate some stuff and
Wikipedia.
And looked at some YouTubes. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the same thing. I'm not saying it's exactly the same.
Ish. Ish.
It's the modern version of what he did. I asked ChatGPT to explain it to me. I mean, that's kind of look. Fuck and me. Had, George Sartin was around today. He would have been doing the same thing. Oh fuck! I don't have to look. I asked GPT to translate it for me. What the fuck?
And I had Heather read Wikipedia to me. So practically the same thing.
In German.
But exactly. But we and then I asked her to translate that. We stand on the shoulders of giants.
Hell yeah.
Thank you. I've been promoted. You know, considering I'm going to die tonight, Cam, that's unnecessary.
Speaking of which, do you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I haven't seen it lately, but Heather has, and she tells me about it, but no.
Well, you know, Richard Lewis passed away in the last week or so. Yeah. Larry David's best friend since they were 12 years old.
Wow.
He's been in every season of Curb Your Enthusiasm going back, you know, over the last 20 years. In this last, we've been watching the most recent season.
Right.
And yeah, he looks like a man about to die in it. He's just got
Yeah.
But he's always got skin stretched over his frame.
Yeah. But he's always stressed out. He's always fucking anxious. And it's probably because he's friends with Larry David. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, like, he doesn't look like a well man in this season, but, you know, like, so much kudos to him for showing up, doing the show, his last work, the last thing he did. Like, and that's like, you're going to die with your boots on tonight. Like, you know, you'll have done, this will be your best work.
Microphone.
The most amount.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 And penis a lot in of the giggling. Other, but don't worry about that.
And how do you tell the difference between the penis and the microphone? I mean,
well, one's a big black. Here, let me show you. One's a big black. Anyway, we'll
thing
off
with
air.
The knob on the end.
Off air. And the other one's not.
And the other one's your penis. Al-Khwarizmi, born Please around God. 780
yes.
CE, died around 850. His name suggests that he was originally from Khwarizm or Khorazm. Today, I think a province of Uzbekistan.
Ah,
we don't know much about his life. Again, kind of surprisingly, but we do know that Al-Mamun employed him in the House of Wisdom, where he worked not just as a translator, but as a mathematician and astronomer, and then as the head of the House of Wisdom.
Wow,
around about 820 CE, he was instrumental in introducing the Arabs to the use of Hindu numerals, carried out important work in geography. But of course, his greatest legacy is his book on algebra. The name of the book in Arabic is Kitab al-Jabr, J-A-B-R, compendious book on calculation by completion and balancing. I believe that Jabr means balancing. Okay. And he laid out for the very first time the rules and the steps for solving algebraic equations. And the process is known today as the algorithm, which takes its name, it's the Latinized version of his name. Al-Khwarizmi became Algorithmus, the Latinized version, and then in English it became algorithm. So he's the father of algebra and also sort of the very important to the field of trigonometry as well.
Right.
He also wrote on other stuff like mechanical devices like the astrolabe and the sundial. He worked on a project to determine the circumference of the Earth, made a world map, overseeing about 70 geographers to make a world map.
God.
But like just this huge brain, like a Da Vinci level brain, this guy. And then when in the 12th century, when his work, so, you know, we haven't even touched on this yet. I guess this is where we're going to get to after we wrap up. And I think, by the way, this is probably the last episode on the Islamic Golden Age because I think we've, like, the objective of this, and I don't know, we're like, the objective was to explain how and why the Islamic caliphates in Baghdad in the 8th and 9th century developed all of this knowledge, and then it goes on for a couple of hundred years more. Then you have Before the Reconquista, which is the Renaissance part of the story,
right?
You know, you have all of the Crusades that go on, and a lot of these works make their way into Europe during the Crusades. We'll probably have to touch on that. I guess that might be the next mini-series that we do, is looking at the role of the Crusades and bringing the knowledge to the West. But his work is one of those in the 12th century that makes its way to Europe, and it had a huge impact on right. the advance of mathematics in Europe. He was just like hugely influential, in, not only in mathematics, but in science. I mean, there you can't think of any of the hard sciences without
right.
the use of algebra and trigonometry, algorithms, all of that kind of stuff.
It's the foundation. Boom.
Yeah.
There we go.
Foundation of science. It's the foundation of computing. It's the foundation of everything that we right. value in the modern world. All goes back to this guy,
right.
Al-Khwarizmi, in the early 9th century.
No, I'm glad you said that when we get to the next phase of this, and this is the last of, because I think we've more than made the point about their contribution. So you got the ancient Greeks. They write a bunch of stuff down, and a lot of people in the Middle East as well, you know, during that same time, writing stuff down. Whatever form it gets to the caliphs, they bring people together, they translate it, they improve upon it. Don't think that they're just copying what the Greeks did. They, you know, like we're making this point, they've improved upon it along with the Hindu contribution. Then it gets back through war, it gets back to Europe, and then they pick it up, they improve it, and then they have the Renaissance. So again, it's like it's just a cycle, circular thing. But again, there's always be improvements being made because there are enough people who have money and means that realize the value of this stuff and to keep pushing the envelope, because that's what it means to be human. You know, what's over the mountain, what's over on the other side of the ocean. And again, unfortunately, a lot of the stuff is destroyed, but we have enough information to be able to put a compelling story together and appreciate all those who came before us. I just think it's really cool.
And the great irony that I've always loved is the Crusades were an attempt by the Christians to take back the Holy Lands
yes.
to strengthen their religion.
Yes.
But in entering into the Islamic Empire, the Ottoman Empire,
mm-hmm.
Even pre the Ottomans, the Islamic, the Arabic Islamic lands,
right.
they rediscovered a lot yeah. of this science that had been forgotten. And mathematics and observation, they took that back,
mm-hmm.
which led to the Renaissance,
yeah.
which led to the collapse of religious belief around the world. So
wow.
by going into the Holy Land to strengthen yeah. religion, they actually weakened their religion by introducing science and rational thinking back into
the
Western world.
I think that's called poetic justice. If I may be so cruel.
Exactly. Al-Khwarizmi also wrote another major book that doesn't get as much PR, but is just as important. It was called Kitab Surat al-Ard. Mm-hmm. The image of the earth gets translated as geography. It's known as his book on geography.
Oh, cool.
It was sort of this massive mapping exercise that I talked about. He built this map of the world for Al-Mamun. It presented the coordinates of places based on the geography of Ptolemy, but improved values for the Mediterranean Sea, Asia, and Africa. They basically did a major update of Ptolemy's book on geography. Yeah. And it was, again, very influential
right.
book around the world as it made its way through Europe. But he wrote all of his books with the encouragement of Al-Mamun,
right.
including, of course, his book on algebra. And it's survived, and it's a fascinating book when you delve into the way that he approached it and figured it out.
Mm.
And just dealing with algebra means restoration, not balancing. I think restoration.
Okay.
Because you're restoring the hidden variables, I guess, in this.
Right.
Okay. Adding numbers to both sides of an equation to consolidate or cancel them out.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it got translated in Latin as Liber, book, Algebrae et Al-Mukabala. Al-Mukabala, I don't know what that means, by Robert of Chester in 1145. and by Gerard of Cremona. There is a unique Arabic copy kept at Oxford. It was translated in 1831 by a guy called Rosen. And there's a Latin translation kept at Cambridge. But it was all about solving polynomial equations up to the second degree, discussed methods of reduction and balancing, talked about the transposition of terms to the other side of an equation, cancelling them out. But here's something that I found really interesting. You know how we use Greek letters in algebra like X to denote an unknown? That didn't exist. The use of mathematical symbols like that didn't exist in his day.
Oh, wow.
They weren't invented until the 14th century, also by Arab mathematicians.
Right.
He just used the Arabic word for thing. So he'd say 10 minus a thing equals.
Right.
And I was just thinking, like, algebra is complicated enough when you're a kid trying to learn it. Imagine learning it without mathematical symbols in
Where's
there.
Where's the X? Yes, yes.
Yeah. 10 minus a thing plus plus another thing squared equals...
What thing? Yeah.
Five.
Yeah.
Well, solve for the thing.
That begs the question, what did pirates mark on their map to denote the treasure until the X came along? That's what I want to know. We're in the timeline of history. Did they start using the X? So, again, just another contribution by people in the Middle East.
Well, I've got a lot on the introduction of mathematical symbols coming up, right?
Oh, cool.
The transition to symbolic algebra, where only symbols are used, first seen in the work of Arabic mathematicians Ibn al-Banna al-Marakushi, sort of in the early 1300s, and Abu Hassan Ibn Ali al-Falasadi, in sort of the early to mid 1400s. Al-Kalasadi, the last guy there, he was the last sort of major medieval Arab algebraist, and he sort of improved on the algebraic notation that al-Banna, the guy who came before him, did.
Right.
So there were other people that had used other forms of notation, like some of the great Indian mathematicians like Brahmagupta, but Al-Kalasadi's algebraic notation was the first to have symbols for the functions inside of them. And he's really considered the father of algebraic symbolism. He represented the most mathematical symbols using characters from the Arabic alphabet, not the Greek alphabet. So nobody today in the West would understand those. But then when it made its way to Renaissance Europe, they started to, you know, become westernized. The first symbols to be used were addition and subtraction, a plus symbol and a minus symbol. The plus sign was first used by Nicola Oresmi in 1360 in his work Algorithmus Proportionium. The plus symbol itself comes from et, meaning and in Latin, the same way as an ampersand.
Right.
An ampersand comes from et in the written form. In mathematics, it comes from et. So it was an E with a T. Basically, you got rid of the E and you were just left with the T. So the plus symbol is just
That's
a
cool.
T for
that is
et.
Cool. Right.
Oresmi was at the University of Paris, and then there was an Italian, Giovanni di Casali, who also sort of provided graphical demonstrations of the distance covered by a body undergoing uniformly accelerated motion, and he was using similar symbols as well. The minus sign was first used in 1489 by Johannes Widmann in his book Mercantile Arithmetic. Apparently, he used it with the plus symbol to indicate a deficit and a surplus. So he's like, well, we got a T with a plus.
We got to have something. Sorry.
What are we going to do for less than? Well, we'll just take the vertical line out of the T.
Voila.
And that will mean less than, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, we don't even think
thing.
About it. Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
The plus symbol was 1360. The minus sign was 129 years later. Before somebody was like, Maybe we can expand on this, you know?
Make it better. Yes. But why the gap?
Why the big gap? Yeah. Why the gap? Why is it over 100 years before somebody was like, well, fuck, if plus symbol's a good idea, why don't we come up with symbols for the other things?
I want a coffee mug with a picture of you and me with our hands like this and like a question like, I don't know. And then it says, why the gap? I think we're onto something here.
They probably did. I mean, the answer is people probably did come up with things, but none of them stuck.
Right.
The minus symbol
marketing.
Just
they didn't call Bannon and Stan and Barry. They did not call the right marketing team. Yeah. Yeah. Live and learn.
One of the guys who really popularized all of it, though, was our old friend Luca Pacioli, Leonardo da Vinci's mathematician friend, who wrote the Summa di Arithmetica Geometria Proportioni e Proportionalità that Da Vinci did the drawings for.
Right.
He drew all of the Platonic solids he did the drawings for.
That's cool.
He had symbols for plus and minus in that, plus it contained algebra.
Right.
So decimals didn't become common until the early 17th century.
Right.
Thanks to a Scottish landowner and mathematician, also a physicist and astronomer, called John Napier, who discovered logarithms. He was born in Merchiston Tower in Edinburgh and became known as the Marvelous Merchiston. And he invented decimals. So before that, no decimals. Well, he did invent them. They became common. I mean, he sort of started to use them in his book on logarithms, and when logarithms took off, so did decimals. So just like the whole development of using symbols and modern mathematics took centuries.
Yes.
I mean, if you go back to Al-Khwarizmi, the early to mid-800s, it takes another 700 years before people start using symbols like that in algebra. Well, there were Arabic symbols, but in terms of like in the West,
right?
Even though his books got translated in the 1100s, it takes another 300-500 years before people figure out how to use symbols and decimal points.
Yeah. If I could real quick.
Shit moves slowly, Ray.
Shit moves slowly. Yes. Well, see, there's two reasons.
Ray speed. That's how slowly it was.
It's a Ray pace. Not unlike once you die, it will no longer be called podcasting, but camcasting. I'm working on that right now.
I saw some farm animals in Virginia that had been Ray-paced.
Did they have a look on their face like this, like shock? You're not wrong. You know,
you've been ray-paced.
What I think is cool is all the stuff that you're describing.
Yeah.
Repeatedly. Some of the stuff that you've been describing is obviously to make business more efficient, to calculate interest better or whatever. And what something that we mentioned at the beginning of the show that we did last week was when the caliph has his court and he's got all these people, what some of those people were doing with their math, it wasn't just math for math's sake to see how far they could figure things out. It was like, how do we make a better tax system? Not a more fair tax system, but a better, like, how can we really know what's going on? We need accurate information. So there's people that's doing it for business. There's people that's doing it for taxes. And as far as the geography, there's the Mediterranean Sea you got to be able to traverse. There's, big open plains or deserts that you got to be able to traverse. And so a lot of this has real world applications. But some of these people, when you were mentioning that very long Italian title for a second there, I just thought you broke into song. Some of them are just doing it for the sheer love of discovery or they come across something new where they have a question and they literally figure out some new branch of whatever science to answer that question. And I just think it's amazing. Some of it's applicable. It's real world. And some of it's just for knowledge sake. And just like Al Mamoun, for him, it was a little bit of both and he was highly motivated.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, there was practical applications for all of this stuff, it's people who were doing it probably had a passion for it and loved it, but they had to get paid at some point.
Exactly.
So there was somebody who thought there was you know, somebody value will pay for this sort of stuff.
Exactly. You know, you know what you just reminded me of? In three episodes, we went from let's figure out how to turn some kind of metal into gold to algebra. I mean, yes, it does move slow, but again, humans are amazing. Progress has always been made in some section of the world or whatever. And it might take a while to get to other parts of the world. But again, the human spirit just keeps moving forward, and that should give us hope.
The human spirit.
Yeah, it's cool. It's fucking cool.
Such a fucking American. Do you want to do you want to put your hand on your heart now and play some fucking
put it somewhere
overwrought
else?
Theme song?
There's how could you not, you know, read Leonardo and feel good about some humans? Not all, certainly not us, but there are some humans out there who will take us to the next plateau. I know it's not me. I'm going to be looking up the skirt while they're climbing the mountain, but I just think it's cool to acknowledge that there are people out there like this that I will never be able to understand. Mm.
Yeah, like the people, well, the guy who invented history podcasting. What a fucking legend.
That's right.
Look, wrapping up the House of Wisdom stuff, we haven't even begun to touch on the many, many great Arab scholars that worked there or that, you know, worked there for the next couple of hundred years. We're not going to go into detail because this isn't the Islamic Golden Age series. It's the Renaissance series, and we will skip forwards. But just to give sort of a high level, you know, there were people who translated works by the great Greek medical expert Galen, like on the natural faculties, on the anatomy of veins and arteries, on the anatomy of nerves, his 10 treatises on the eye, all of which had a huge impact on the Arabic world, but of course then went on to have a huge impact on people like Leonardo da Vinci when he got translations of those. I know that he referred to those when he was working on the eye.
Right.
There were guys there that studied the theory of music, the philosophy of Aristotle, the history of animals, the zoobiology of animals, mathematicians like al-Battani and Abu al-Wafa, who made huge contributions to trigonometry. They took pre-existing Greek and Hindu works on trigonometry and expanded those. They were instrumental in sort of developing trigonometry as a distinct, separate mathematical discipline, coming up with functions like sine, cosine, tangents, applying it to fields like astronomy and surveying. Damn. There were just huge amounts of work done at the House of Wisdom on astronomy, geography, engineering, et cetera, et cetera. The Ban Musa brothers that we mentioned in an earlier episode worked there, and all of the inventions that they came up with. And, you know, you can't, as I said earlier, you can't really imagine a modern world without all of these things. Algebra, the language of patterns, gives us the ability to describe relationships between quantities, solve equations, predict unknowns, model situations, whether it's investing, like the stuff that I do outside of history podcasting, using models to predict what shares to buy, or whether it's understanding environmental science or computers, chemistry, physics, biological processes. You know, without algebra, all of the complex calculations that get used across technology, medicine, science today wouldn't be possible. Trigonometry, like the study of triangles, used in, you know, outside of geometry classes, used in physics, analyzing wave patterns, light waves, sound waves, understanding the dynamics of motion, talking about oscillations and rotations. It's used for designing buildings and roads and bridges, and it's used for in astronomy for celestial bodies and their movements. It's used in computer graphics and design, gaming. You know, everything in the modern world is based on things like calculus, which builds on top of algebra and trigonometry, understanding change and motion, physics, engineering, economics, using calculus. Isaac Newton obviously did a lot of work on that when he wasn't trying to figure out how to turn lead into gold. I mean, I think we can wrap up all of these House of Wisdom episodes by just, you know, really I wanted people to have a much better and deeper appreciation for the role that Islam played mm-hmm. in modern science and modern technology.
Yes.
Islam and the Arabic and Persian scientists and scholars and philosophers and caliphs
yeah.
that pushed all of this forward in the 700s, 800s, 900s and on for the next couple of hundred years at a time when Christianity in Europe was stultifying. It was the Dark Ages. And yes, there were pockets of things that happened. Wasn't yeah. completely dark.
Monasteries. Yeah.
But, you know, generally speaking, while Islam was pushing our knowledge further for 500 years, in the West, Christianity was trying to prevent most advancement and most kinds of advancement in science and technology from happening.
Yes.
But eventually, you know, hundreds of years later, it leaks into the Western world through conquest right. and then makes its hands eventually into the hand. It makes its way into the hands of guys like Leonardo da Vinci. And yes. we in the West go, yeah. oh, fucking Leonardo da Vinci.
It was great. What a
great guy.
Yeah.
yeah, greatest man ever. Yeah. You and I spent 2 years talking about fucking Leonardo da Vinci.
Yeah. Triangles.
And I don't regret that.
Right.
But I wanted people to really
yes.
understand that without Islam and all of these Arabic and Persian scholars and caliphs,
yes,
there most likely would not have been a Leonardo da Vinci.
Right. And if I could just add on to what you said, so during the Dark Ages, there's pockets of literature, there's pockets of study, of pockets of intelligence throughout Europe and the Middle East. Baghdad is the exact opposite. It's openly encouraged. And the caliph was not the only one financially supporting this. The brothers were supporting it. There was libraries all over Baghdad and outside of Baghdad, obviously. So they're having this explosion, this golden age, and we're, you know, hiding from the next Hun attack or whatever. So again, they should get, they should be acknowledged for that. And I don't want to push this too much, but it would have been nice if the people in the West had treated the people of the night in the East a little better. Oh, I don't know. Let's say, a British oil company or the Americans overthrowing, you know, we could have had a much better relationship with that region of the world they gave us, and we could have celebrated each other. It was not to be because of greed. And, you know, maybe in the future we can do better. We could learn from our mistakes and do better. But they certainly do deserve credit for a lot of things that most of us don't even know that they did. Thank you. I've been promoted.